the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Every entrepreneur would like to minimize their failures. So let's talk about that with entrepreneur Philip Lubin, who's the professor of physics at UC Santa Barbara, as well as the co-founder of Directed Energy. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Good to be here. So I know that you don't consider yourself as a typical entrepreneur. Why is that?
I do not. No, because I'm in the business of education. I'm in the business of enabling people to think far beyond themselves. And so I'm not your typical entrepreneur. I'm not selling you a widget. I'm not selling you the next best coffee maker or something that's perhaps even relevant to how you see your everyday life. What I'm here to discuss is how do you see yourself in a much more visionary sense? What really is the essence of not just you, but what is the essence of humanity? And, you started out by saying, people would love to minimize their failures or not have failures at all. Yeah. But if you never had a failure, you wouldn't know what a success was. And if you never failed, you would never learn from your failures. Now, when we grow as children, we fail by falling. We literally fall. And then we stand up again, hopefully, if we're blessed enough to be able to walk. And we fail by speaking because we don't speak in the way that we eventually learn to speak. And so all these are failures that everybody has in their life, but they're really not failures. All they are opportunities to grow.
So you think that failure is a stepping stone, a learning tool?
I don't even see it as a failure. I see it as an opportunity to succeed, an opportunity to grow.
So I got to play devil's advocate with you then.
Sure.
Because that's not the typical thing that I hear from most professors. I think the environment of school, having just gone through it myself, is conditioning people to believe that failure is a bad thing and you actually get punished for it. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I actually don't consider myself to be a teacher. I don't think you can be taught. I think you can learn. All I see myself as enabling people to be able to learn. That's what I see myself as. I think when people use the term, this person is a teacher, it's fine as a euphemism for what people do. But when you talk of a fireman hopefully doesn't start fires. A fireman, fire person, puts out fires. So a teacher actually enables learning, helps to encourage people to learn, helps to provide resources. And that's what my role is at the university. I've been doing this for, close to 40 years, and I love it. I love working with very passionate, excited people of all ages. And in my environment, I typically work with, 20-year-olds, just because that's the nature of the university. But I love to engage people of all ages, and I find that I learn as much from them as they learn from me, and probably I learn much more from them.
So as a professor of physics, I've got to know, is there any correlation that you could share, like for the aspiring entrepreneurs or business owners tuned in right now, is there a correlation or a lesson from physics that can be transitioned into business?
Sure. If you look around you and think of what things that are in your everyday life or that you think are amazing in your life, are related to fundamental science, whether it's physics or engineering or any other name that you wish to put on it, chemistry, et cetera. And just look around. I mean, look at your smart device. Look at this show. The show is being watched by people who are enabled by the scientific discoveries that allow flat screen TVs, the internet, all the amazing things, space exploration, et cetera. Why are people fascinated by the NASA missions to explore our solar system? Why do they love the imagery? Why do they love looking at Mars or Jupiter or pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope?
Well, let's talk about that. I know that space is one of your things. Directed Energy, you guys are trying to take DNA and the essence of people and put it out in the space so they can live forever, right? Tell us a little bit more about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so this actually goes back about 7 years when we started working on ways to enable planetary defense. And every once in a while, the Earth gets hit by something big. And that's what wiped out the dinosaurs, we believe, some 65 million years ago. So we've been looking at ways to protect the Earth. And out of that same technological base that allows us to defend the Earth, we immediately realized that that same technology allows us to reach extraordinarily high speeds, much faster than any chemical propulsion system. And that allows us the capability to begin to think seriously about exploring interstellar space and getting to the nearest stars, which was only science fiction a decade ago. But now it's not science fiction. It's something we can seriously explore. But what do you want to send out into space? What do you, as Mark Lack, what do you want to send out into space? In general, you're completely disconnected, right? You watch it on TV or you read about it. But suppose you, Mark Lack, could be on that spacecraft. Suppose your DNA could be on that spacecraft. Suppose your thoughts, your visions, your wishes, your desires, your aspirations in life, your poetry, your soul in the way that you can think about it. Suppose you could be on that spacecraft, and suppose every Mark Lack on the planet could actually be on that same spacecraft. That's what we're trying to do. That's our vision for how to involve humanity in exploration, not only of the solar system, but as we go out towards interstellar missions.
It's a big vision, and I'm excited to tear it apart with you in a second.
Good.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, and joining me today is Philip Lubin, the man who's trying to send people's DNA and the essence of them to space. So how are you going to do that? It's a huge vision, a huge feat to overcome and accomplish. How are you guys going to do that? I know you're starting a Kickstarter campaign soon.
Yeah, we're literally, by the time you watch us, it'll be started. Okay, it's called Voices of Humanity, because we literally want to take the voice of every person on the planet, whether an audio voice or a picture or a tweet or a poem or your DNA digitized. We would like to take that and send it into space in a couple of ways. One, we'd like to reduce it down to a small amount of silicon that we can store the data on. You know, if you go back to the year, say, 1960, when we were just beginning the space program, and you asked, what would a gigabyte of memory have cost in the year 1960? The answer would have been of order $1 trillion. And then you fast forward some, you know, 56 years to the present, and you ask, what does a gigabyte of memory cost you?
Nothing.
And you go into the store, and it's less than a dollar. So in those, you know, some 56 years, we have reduced the price of memory by a trillion times, and also increased its speed and drastically reduced its size.
So we're doing this in the space exploration space.
Today, we can literally take a message from every single person on the planet and place it on a piece of silicon much smaller than the tip of my finger and much lower mass than a postage stamp.
So this is how we're digitizing DNA?
Yeah, well, digitizing DNA is a slightly different process because we have to actually take some of your DNA. So one of the things is that we'd like to take I know you have two hands, so we'll take maybe one of them, right? We'd like to take your DNA and digitize it, and we'd like to actually send you into space. So that can be done today. It's not that expensive. We're not going to do it personally, but we're going to take the data that comes from the digitization of your DNA and place it on a silicon wafer. And one of many people, in fact, we can hold more than 10 billion people, which don't exist yet, but soon they will. We can take the entire Earth's DNA. We can take the entire Earth's tweets and pictures and eventually put it on one of our wafers that we will then send into space. But we can do more than that. We can effectively immortalize you. I mean, you know, everyone wants to live forever, but
how are you going to get people interested in this stuff, though? So it's easy to understand, and they are a part of your Kickstarter campaign or support you in your vision. In a nutshell, how are you getting people to be on board with this?
So we have a mechanism for them to do that. So we have a Kickstarter. You can look us up, just Voices of Humanity. Go to Kickstarter.com or visit us on directed.energy, which is our website. And you say, hey, I want to send a picture of my mother into space. I want to send a picture of my girlfriend or boyfriend or significant
other. Just because they can, just for
just
the heck of it?
Just because they can, yeah, because I say that'd be a nice birthday present or an anniversary gift or, you
like
know,
when somebody puts a little pirate chip or a letter in a bottle and puts it out in the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's a message in a bottle, except this is a message on a chip. Except we have another way of doing it.
Are we expecting somebody to find this?
We don't know. You know, we don't know what's out there. Another part of my life is actually that aspect of, you know, what is possible to be seen in the universe.
What do you believe? In a nutshell, we don't even get too crazy here.
Well, someone asked me my opinion recently, and I said something they didn't like. But
I'm open for anything.
Okay. Well, we have no evidence that there's anything outside of the Earth in terms of intelligence. We, of course, have no evidence for intelligence on Earth at all, period. But we have no evidence that there's anything outside the Earth in terms of life. We don't know, of course, that there isn't, and you can't...
you don't have to rationalize to me that there's no evidence.
Yeah.
I still believe that it's too big for there to not be, but that's just my opinion.
Well, you know, we now know that there are roughly one planet per star in the universe, if we base our extrapolation on...
But give us some contrast. How many stars are there?
So there's about 100 billion stars in our galaxy alone, and there's about 100 billion galaxies in the universe. So that means...
So odds are pretty good.
There is of order more than a billion trillion planets in the universe.
So we're hoping if I send out a picture of my mom, someone's going to find it?
Well, or they may clone you. Let's say we send out Mark Lack's DNA, and then someday...
And then I can be hosting on another
army's
planet.
A clone army's going to come back. You can be the interstellar...
I'll be the host on all the planets.
Entrepreneurial, you know, rock star but you will be a rock star, literally.
Truly.
You'll be a true, true rock star. So we don't know. We don't know what's out there. But our purpose is not to send it out so some civilization might clone you. Our purpose is to have people envision themselves as much more. We want people to catch a vision that you can be much more than simply sitting in this studio talking to me. But you can see yourself as immortalized.
I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Mark.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Freedom doesn't...
Back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Our guest today is Nancy O'Connell. She is the co-founder of Wine Crashers. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So what does your company do? Obviously, it's related to wine.
But yes.
What do you guys do?
We are a wine retail company, secondary market, and we have taken the premise of Hotwire and Priceline and applied the model to wine. So,
So give me a contextual example.
Let's see here.
What does that
we
mean?
Try to secure the lowest price in the market, and actually we do secure the lowest price in the market and withhold producer information so that all the consumer knows is that they're buying a wine that's rated from either Wine Spectator, Robert Parker, or Venice Media, and also Berghound, and that it's rated from them, and what rating it is, what price it's at, and the critic tasting notes so that they can make their own decision if it's something that they're willing to try.
So is this solely a website or an app? What is it?
We are solely a website right now.
Okay.
We hope, of course, I think future stuff that we would have an app or something. But right now we also have a wine club.
Okay. And so basically your guys' business model is solely getting people onto a website, looking for the best priced wine of their favorite choice.
Yep.
Okay,
exactly.
So how are you getting these people online? What's the strategy?
Right
social
now,
media,
social media has totally been our go-to. So that's about it. And trying to get people out that way.
Do you guys have anything cool or creative or tests or quizzes or surveys or incentives that you guys are doing on social media?
We actually did in the very beginning. We've since kind of fizzled out a little bit, but I have a feeling it's going to be coming back. We had really good response rate with it, and we really enjoyed putting it all together
and
as
what,
well.
And what was it?
Quizzes.
Quizzes, okay.
So it was kind of fun to test people's knowledge on, you know, U.S. versus France and
you know, quizzes,
what people like.
Did they actually yield like a return? Like,
they actually did.
You could actually track that this survey generated this much income?
Yep, exactly. Wow. So it was a lot of fun. And really in the very beginning when we were doing it, it was bringing in people to the website. And so it was very cool to be able to see this quiz generated this amount of people coming to the website and checking it out.
So what's been the hardest part about actually getting Wine Crashers started and up off the ground?
So for us, it's breaking people out of their norm of buying from retailers that they're usually accustomed to, or kind of the new premise of not being able to see who the producer is. And kind of challenging them to read something and think, is this something I'm willing to try? So I think that's really been our biggest hurdle.
Why did you actually come up with Wine Crasher? By the way, I love the concept. I'm going to have to share it with a lot of different people because everyone starts to drink wine at some point, right? You get to a stage in your life where you become a wine enthusiast. And so I love what you guys are up to, but I want to know how it actually got created. Was it because you're just looking around and shopping for wine and you saw like the concepts of Priceline and you just connected the two, or how'd you come up with the idea?
It's so I can't totally take claim for the concept at all.
You're
it's
the co-founder.
Actually I'm the co-founder. So the founder of our company, Neve Nissenson, Neve and I actually had worked together he and I had worked together for a high-end retail company called Sudaraj, and he was the CFO there, and we kind of hit it off just in general. I left the company to go to a different winery and kind of check things out, and actually work a harvest is what I really wanted to do at the time. Okay. And so Neve ended up leaving the company as well. And it was something that came to him like in an elevator one day. He was just sitting there going
to either
somewhere.
Elevator or a shower.
Yeah, exactly. Other, right? He was in an elevator going somewhere and he looked at his wife and he goes, I mean, why can't you sell wine the way you sell hotels? And it sounds so basic and so simple and a little bit demeaning, especially for the wine community. But what he was hitting on was something really unique. And I had to, when he pulled me in, I was at first a skeptic, but now a firm believer. So,
so you guys have basically Priceline the wine industry. Co-founder of Wine Crasher, Nancy O'Connell, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. So Nancy, you guys took the Priceline model and have been disrupting the wine industry with it. What are you most excited about the future coming up in your journey?
I think the possibilities that right now we've stayed pretty true to what we really want to do, which is just have it be like a Priceline and like a Hotwire. But there's so much potential for growth there in changing certain things and kind of experimenting. And because it's so open that way, I get so excited about what could be. So.
Yeah, it's really exciting because that's one of those things where Wine Crasher could end up being acquired for a huge lump sum. So hopefully that does happen for you. What did you do before Wine Crasher? Were you always an entrepreneur? I know you were dabbling a little bit that you and your co-founder, you know, were doing some things before that. So maybe skip what did you guys do before that.
We were actually, no, I've never really been entrepreneurial. I've always had ideas and things, but never really taken it. I needed someone to kind of like push me out of my comfort zone.
So that's what your founder did.
And that's what the founder did. And I've actually been in the wine industry for quite a long time. And so it's been something that I started at a younger age working at a local wine shop close to my house. I've been in wine for a while and then moving up to Napa Valley and working from direct-to-consumer wineries to retail places to doing harvests. It's just kind of been all over the place. So,
what did you do as a kid? Were you one of those kids selling candy bars door-to-door or lemonade stand?
No, I wasn't. I think I did for a brief moment have like a dog walking business.
You don't even remember?
I think I did. No, I'm pretty certain I did, but it was really like three people in the neighborhood who let me walk their dogs, which was really nice.
That's a true business model right there, right?
Exactly. Loyal customers. But outside of that, no, I was a total introverted kid. I read a lot and content doing that. So.
What do you think is maybe like the one biggest strength you have that is going to help make you a successful entrepreneur?
What would I say is one
what
of
would you say?
What would I say?
Your biggest strength.
I protest in doing things a lot, but I will always do them. And I do like to push myself outside of my comfort zone on all moan about it while I'm doing it, but I'll do it. So I think
coming on here, you are doing an awesome job. I love it.
My parents always made me try things. You know, even if I said, I don't like this, they would say, have you ever tried it? No, I haven't. Well, then try it. So I've always put myself in a position where you don't know unless you try it.
Well, so. I value and respect that about you because so many people don't want to get pushed out of their comfort zones. And so the fact that you understand the value of pushing through your comfort zone is something important. Tony Robbins, one of my mentors, says life begins at the end of your comfort zone. And I think you understand that. And
that's very true.
And your life has been probably impacted dramatically in ways that you haven't even been aware of.
Exactly.
By forcing yourself to get uncomfortable. Do you have maybe an example of maybe one of the best times in your life that you did something that made you uncomfortable, but ended up having a really big gift on the other side or made you become a better version of yourself? Outside of course, doing this show with us right now.
Man, well, that was what I was going to say was right now. Actually, I don't really know if I do. I'm trying to think about like...
It was when your parents
really
made you try mustard for the first time.
Probably could have been something that simple.
Do you have a favorite quote that you live by or a favorite book that you've read that's really impacted you?
Oh, man. My favorite quote right now has been, Rome wasn't built in a day.
And it's How does kind that of How does that relate to your business or your life right now?
We're still in the beginning phases of Wine Crasher, and because there's so much possibility and because it is the beginning phase, you have so many hurdles that you're perpetually trying to go and cross. And then you also have times of highs and times of just kind of like pitfall lows. So for me, Rome wasn't built in a day is a really good reminder that it's patience that carries you through. So just put your head down, you know, and persevere through it, and you'll get through.
That's a powerful quote. Rome wasn't built in a day. We'll be right back with Nancy O'Connell. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. Hispanic entrepreneurs are confident about their 2019 business outlook, according to the 2019 Bank of America Hispanic Small Business Owner Spotlight. A strong majority are planning for increased revenue, expansion, and long-term growth. However, low unemployment is creating obstacles for Hispanic business owners looking to recruit and retain talent. Elizabeth Romero, Small Business Executive at Bank of America.
Hispanic entrepreneurs are embracing a more confident outlook toward growth compared to their non-Hispanic peers. However, the ultra-competitive labor market has made hiring and retaining employees a significant challenge.
Optimism is also paving the way for future generations of Hispanic business owners. 34% of Hispanic entrepreneurs say their business has grown beyond their original vision, and 38% plan to pass their business on to their children. For more information, visit newsroom.bankofamerica.com.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now more from the Milken Institute Global Conference. Welcome to Business Rockstars. We are at the Milken Conference. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Sean Robinson, a familiar face, of course, famous TV host, also a producer, author, philanthropist, so many things. Wow, you've got it going on.
Yes, yes, I do. I'm a hard-working woman.
You are a busy woman, and you are here at the conference. You're going to be a panelist.
Yes.
And the title of the panel is what?
Yes, I'm actually moderating the panel tomorrow. It's called What Has Happened to the American Dream? As you know, the American Dream has changed so much over the past decades. And so we want to look at, is the American Dream still attainable? What does it take to have the security that our parents felt they had in their jobs or even before that? So it's going to be really interesting. We've got some great panel guests, including my dear friend Will Packer, the Emmy-nominated film producer. He is going to be joining us on the panel and some other great people. So I'm looking very excited. I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome. So I have to ask you what your take is. Do you think the American dream is still attainable?
Yeah, well, you know, it's for many segments of our society, it is attainable. And many people are living the American dream. But there is this whole segment of society that has felt left out of that dream. So we are going to be addressing some of the issues that face different segments of society and how we as a community, the people here at this conference who care about making change in our world, what can we do about it to help some of those people, many of those people, achieve that dream.
And it certainly seems like you've fulfilled your American dream. Would you say that you have?
Well, unless this is an island in Tahiti, and I don't know about it, I'm still working towards
that's
it.
That's fair. But, so you know, always something more to strive
always
for.
Yes, definitely. And yes, have I achieved the American dream? I'm a girl from Detroit, Michigan, who made it to Hollywood and was one of the few African-American female faces that I saw on the red carpet for many, many years. And so, yes, I have achieved a lot in my life, and I'm very thankful for that. I am well aware that there are, there were circumstances in my life that led me to this path, and a lot of other people might not experience that. So I think it's important that we hear people at this conference who care about being change makers. We reach back and help those other people who are not as fortunate, and that means being role models to a lot of these young people and mentoring and giving opportunities, business opportunities and other types of chances to people who are really, really working hard. And looking at some of the laws that we have in the country that are preventing people from just moving up the economic ladder.
And you are quite the role model and worked very hard to get to where you're at. Tell me a little bit about that journey that's brought you to be a TV host and entrepreneur.
Well, you know, I started, like I said, in Detroit, Michigan. I've worked in, before people knew me on a national level at Access Hollywood, I worked in a number of small television markets, working my way up as an anchor, reporter, talk show host. I was in Milwaukee, Austin, where you?
Milwaukee, yes,
Austin, Texas. I was in Miami. I was in Flint, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan. So I've been around.
You paid
a
your
lot.
Dues.
I definitely paid my dues, and you know, it's been tough. It's been, but it was an enjoyable. It has been an enjoyable ride because I am living. I am doing what I want to do.
But you're passionate.
Yes,
about.
And that's, I think, just getting back to. This American dream. It's about being happy. It's about being thinking that you are living your purpose. And I definitely feel I'm living that.
That's amazing. And, you know, a lot of people, if they were a successful TV host like you, they would just call it a day and say that they've made it. But you
no.
keep on hustling. You've got all these projects. Yes. Tell us about a couple of them, like your foundation,
yeah,
your production company.
I still do television work. You know, I still host. People are always calling me to host something. So I'm still doing that. I'm executive producing two shows that are going to pilot that have not been announced yet, but I'm very excited about them.
Awesome.
So also doing some things behind the camera, staying in front of the camera, but I'm really excited about my foundation. It's called the Shawn Foundation for Girls. We launched last year, and it is a grant-making foundation, and it supports small grassroots nonprofits that are doing work in five key areas of girls' issues. And those five key areas are represented by the acronym of my name, S-H-A-U-N. So S is for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. H is for health. A is arts. U is unity. And N is neighborhoods, helping girls and young women in underserved neighborhoods. So if you have a small nonprofit that is doing work in one of those five key areas, we could possibly be a resource for you.
Amazing. And what made you so passionate about these causes?
Well, you know, I'm a girl. Okay. And I know...
Us girls got to stick together.
Yes, yes. And it's important that we provide as many role models as we can for our young women because they are struggling in so many areas. And there's still that ceiling, that glass ceiling that we have to shatter for girls in so many different areas. So I feel like, you know, I had some great female role models in my life. And it's just an opportunity for me to get back to the young girls that look at me as a role model.
Absolutely. And business is one of those areas where women are still behind, but we're slowly but surely catching up. So what advice do you have for female entrepreneurs in particular?
Well, one of the pieces of advice I have is that women are often in competition with each other in so many areas. And we have to learn that the pie is big enough for all of us to have a slice. And so that means that when you see another woman struggling and trying to get, trying to achieve her goals, that you reach out and help and be that role model and be a friend, a mentor. And we have to stop with this competition. Because we oftentimes pit women against each other, and we have to stop with this competition and help each other. And because when one of us succeeds, all of us succeed.
We can all make it, right?
That's right. That's right.
And what would you say is the number one thing that's helped you become successful in your own career?
Well, once again, I had great female role models, and I have I'm passionate about what I do, and the fact that I've had different. Stops along the way where I've met people who have encouraged me. And so, so that's really important. And you have to have, it has to come, it definitely does come from an organic place. But I can't It's important for me to recognize all of the other people that have helped me.
Yeah. Well, Sean, thank you so much for your time. You are just amazing. It was such a pleasure meeting and talking with you.
Thank you. And great job.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot coming from this TV host.
Thank you.
You bet. Sean Robinson, TV host, author, producer, and philanthropist. And we are business rock stars.
This is Business Rockstars.
This kind of is like the greatest space I could imagine ever working in. I met Bruce not in the fashion industry. We met actually at a health club in New York City.
It really wasn't love at first sight. There was a bar on the top floor. We had a drink together, and that led to dinner together. And we started dating.
We started our business in 1987, I believe, when we decided to pick up everything that we had and owned and move to Los Angeles. Here is my office, which I'm the creative director of the company and president. I have my mood boards, of course, my iconic model that we just used, Kate Moss. This is where it all happens for us. We have a great group of designers that make 360 cashmere what it is.
It's great. It really works for us.
We both have different areas of expertise in our business.
If there's a real argument about something, Leslie's right and I'm not.
We started in 2009, really at the time where the market was not good. The price of cashmere had gone down, so Bruce and I felt it was a great opportunity for us to go into that area. We had sold a company before that, so we had the experience of running a company, but this was something new because we were bringing our family into the company. This is our secret design area. We have samples, we have mood boards, and I call this group here our rock stars. It's our newest division of our company, which is Naked Cashmere, and it's where all the online business takes place. On the walls are some of our models that we've shot. A lot of these pictures are from our shoot with Kate Moss that was done in France. So believe it or not, we use this area for our design meetings. We use it for conferences with all of our employees. But most importantly is we use it as our fashion runway.
Having your kids working for the company is invaluable.
Currently, I'm the CMO, so I oversee all of the marketing of the company. But most of all, it's unbelievable working for my parents, especially two such inspiring role models. All we want to do is work with amazing people, which we have, and we've created great collaborations with a handful of them and continue to photograph them, and it's been really well for us.
We're in a business of taste. You know, we're in luxury cashmere. We have to be tastemakers, and then you come here, and it's incredibly creative environment, and I think everybody feels it. So when we do bring people here, whether it's bloggers, celebrities, models, everybody walks in and wants to be a part of it because it looks cool. There's always good music playing, and we have this unbelievable team here. And part of having a place like this, it gives us the opportunity to hire really great people. So that's key. So we think in every position, we can get the best people. Why not work here? Why work somewhere gross?
We love what we do. We have passion for what we do, and we love doing it together.
Sometimes it's okay to be boring. Just kidding, no it's not. This is Oren Claff with Pitch Anything, showing you how to close like the pros. What's missing from most presentations that I see? It's surprise, novelty, and humor. Surprise is more about the setup than the delivery. Because, you see, attention is hard to capture and even harder to hold. It's natural for our audience's attention to drift away, but there's a sequence leading to a surprise that can get it back. Here's how it works. Start the sequence by being boring on purpose and keep it short. Then immediately contrast the boring information you've given with new novel information. Doing it this way gives your audience something interesting to think about. It stimulates thought and regains their attention immediately. This is Everything Entrepreneur. I'm Oren Claff with Pitch Anything.
This is Business Rockstars. Much more still to come from the Milken Institute Global Conference.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
This is Business Rockstars, now back to the Milken Institute Global Conference. Joining me right now, Troy Bullock. He is the co-founder and COO of Good Projects. Thanks for stopping by and chatting.
No problem, of course, anytime.
Awesome. So first of all, tell me, what is Good Projects? So
Good Projects is an organization that started very organically in my college dorm room. It's a nonprofit entity in D.C., specifically in the lower southeast region. We work with at-risk youth and families, just improving the overall quality of life. We do juvenile justice reform. We also run educational camps, summer camps, and we teach entrepreneurship through athletics.
And it was really your personal story and your upbringing that inspired you to give back. So tell me a little bit about your personal story.
Yes, very much so. So my partners and I all started this organization based on the fact that we came from the communities we, you know, want to serve. And it's the thing that we always say is the youth we serve could be us just as much as we could have been them. And for me personally, I grew up in a single parent household. It was just my mom. And I had two younger brothers. And the doctors told my mom at the age of 5 that she wouldn't live past 17. And if she had any children, that during giving birth, she would die. She couldn't have any children. So she had me, she had my other brother, and then at 12, she had my youngest brother. It was at that time that she became bedridden. She basically couldn't leave the bed. She couldn't work anymore. So she was considered disabled. During that time, my father was also one of the top drug dealers in D.C., so he really wasn't in my life. So it was really me, you know, raising myself in the household. You know, we suffered from some homelessness, actually on Christmas Eve. I remember my ninth grade year in high school, Christmas Eve, my house burned down. And that was when I really realized that Things got to change. You know, my life isn't where I want it to be. So I kind of leveraged academics and athletics to attend a private high school after that and then go to Georgetown University. At Georgetown, I mentored juvenile delinquents. And that's when I really realized, hey, this kid can be me. We know the same people. We grew up in the same neighborhood. And I could have been him. So that's when I really dedicated myself to, you know, giving back. And when I graduated Georgetown, I met my two buddies. Well, when I was about to graduate Georgetown, my two buddies and I, we all realized that we had similar stories. They had their own stories similar to mine. And instead of going to Wall Street or doing consulting like all our friends from Georgetown, we decided to create Good Projects and give back. pay it forward.
Wow, what a powerful story. That's amazing. You've overcome so many obstacles, but not everyone does who has a lot of obstacles. So what do you think it was? I'm sure there were many factors. Maybe you can touch on a few of them that allowed you to overcome these obstacles.
Yeah, and these are factors that we really focus on in all our program, and that is exposure, opportunity, and mentorship. And I would say the exposure piece is, I'll give you an example. So we took a kid on a field trip one day. This is a kid who lives about 2 miles from the White House. We took him pretty close to the White House, and he said, where are we? Are we in Maryland? Are we in Virginia? It's so clean around here. So it's just that exposure, you know, for the kids to just see something different and realize there's other opportunities out there, just to get the mind going, just to get the thought process that's actually attainable. And that's when the actions come into place, and that's when the opportunity comes into place. Because for me, it was football. That was my opportunity. That's what gave me the education. So it's just a safe place to be with the opportunity to grow and develop mentally and with football physically. So in our programs, we do football, we do education, we do arts, we do environment, and it's always a safe place. We provide food. So it's just the opportunity to see other things than the home environment, because the majority of people's home environments are toxic, like mine. So.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, a lot of the fellow students at Georgetown went on to go to Wall Street or do other things that are more stereotypically successful, that you know, check off those measurements of money and the title and all that. But you chose to do something more altruistic. You really were called to give back. Was there a moment that made you go, you know what, this is my calling, this is the path for me to start this nonprofit? Or maybe it was many moments or experiences.
Yeah, I think it was two experiences. One is when I met a young kid that I was mentoring in the juvenile justice system. And this kid reminded me of me so much. It didn't make sense. We looked the same, talked the same. We knew the same people, grew up in a similar neighborhood, and smart as a whip. I think he was, you know, more outgoing than I am, smarter than I am. He just made the wrong decisions at some point. And that's when I really realized that if he had the opportunity, he had that exposure, he had an alternative environment like I did, he could have been better than me. He could have went and had the opportunity to go to Wall Street and made that decision himself. Another experience I had was meeting a guy named Frank Luntz. He's a political pollster. He's a great mentor and advisor to my company, and he's the guy who challenged us to actually do this. We were headed on our separate paths, and we met him in our senior year at Georgetown, and he challenged us. He heard our stories, and he said, you guys need to go back. You need to do something special. And we sat down and we created it.
And that's something you've shared with me, is that your network has been very important.
Yes.
You mentioned one member of your network, but then also you've been connected to Milken. And how have these opportunities come about for you, and how have you taken full advantage of them?
Well, it's just putting a pen down on the paper and just sending those emails and just not stopping, waking up every day with that motivation and knowing that there are kids on the street like me that need help. And to be able to help them, we have to leverage our networks. So meeting a guy like Mike Milken is great because he's done the work, he has the resources, and he has the knowledge. So that's a very important piece of, you know, leveraging the network, is using the power dynamic that these guys have, but also using that knowledge, putting it down on paper and implementing it into our own programs and exposing the kids and ourselves to things to grow.
I got to brag about you for a second here, too, because you are 22 years old. You wouldn't know it because you're very mature. You just graduated last May.
Yes.
Not only do you have this nonprofit, you also have a consulting business.
Yes.
So, wow, not a lot of 22-year-olds can say that. With that in mind, what is your number one piece of advice for our new and aspiring entrepreneurs who are watching and listening right now?
Take that risk. Like you said, just last year I was in college. Me and my buddies had a whiteboard and a couple ideas, and we put it down. So be inspired, take that risk, and
get a whiteboard.
Yeah, get a whiteboard. Get a whiteboard, get some people around you to help you. Leverage your network, and wake up every day with a plan. Plan, plan, plan. Get a to-do list, set goals, and achieve them as fast as you can.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for your amazing, amazing work. So
appreciate
cool what
it.
You're up to.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank
for having
you.
Me.